No one knows what impact the deployment of more than 20,000 U.S. combat troops will have on Iraq or on the U.S. armed forces. In addition to that so-called surge of soldiers and Marines into Iraq, Defense Secretary Gates this week announced plans to permanently add 92,000 troops to the U.S. military. Mr. Gates also announced a policy change for National Guard and Reserve units. He's removed the two-year limit on deployments of those units within any five-year period. To talk about these developments, we're joined by Dan Gouret, defense analyst with the Lexington Institute. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
The president is adding troops in Iraq by speeding up the deployment of forces that were already headed there. What does that tell you about the state of U.S. armed forces?
Well, we clearly don't have a lot of spare capacity. There are not a lot of units that are just sitting around. For the active army, at least, they either are in Iraq, they've just been in Iraq, or they were, as some of these brigades, about to go to Iraq. And that's the function of having a relatively small army.
What effect does that have on morale, these multiple hitches?
It's hard to say. So far, it turns out it hasn't been that serious. Not only has the army this past year made its recruiting numbers, but it has been oversubscribed in retention. That is, people who have reached the end of a term of service and re-enlist. And those are the two primary indicators that, in fact, the situation is not yet serious or critical.
Now, you said that the armed forces have met their recruiting numbers, and I must tell you that that's coming as a newsflash to me in that we have run so many stories about how recruitment is below level.
No, in fact, this past year they made their numbers, and those were higher numbers because they were already trying to increase the size of the active army from about 482 to 512. And in fact, they've added about 20,000 over the last couple of years already. So the question really is, can they get the right people?
Well, we'll talk about that a bit.
Sure. The Army actually has, and all the services have, criteria by which they judge the suitability of potential recruits. In particular, they want high school graduates. Mm-hmm. They want people without drug problems or criminal histories for all the obvious reasons. So you have to be physically fit at the same time, or at least meet minimum physical standards. And they have groupings, therefore, that people by their ability to meet certain of these criteria and to pass certain standardized tests. Those who are in the kind of best, highest selected groups tend to be the best soldiers. They're able to be trained readily. As you go down to people who either don't score as high on the tests, aren't as well educated, may not be quite as bright, haven't completed high school, now you start to run into training problems and, in some cases, discipline problems.
Has the U.S. military had to relax some of their standards to fill out the Army so far?
They've had to very slightly. They have begun to take people, I think it's like they call it the Class 4, Category 4, which is one below the first three, which is where they want to take all their people. But the numbers are still fairly small in terms of that grouping, and it's not clear how deep they'll have to go down the ranks in order to get to this new higher number that they want.
I have to ask what effect increased or multiple deployments have on equipment and, for that matter, planning.
Absolutely. It has had really serious effects on equipment. The Army is wearing out its equipment and the Marine Corps at rates 5 to 10 times higher than they expected. For example, tanks, they expected to drive 800 miles a year, and they built in the plan not only for how many they wanted, how long they were going to maintain them, when they refurbish them on that basis. Well, they're driving them now 4,000 and 5,000 miles per year in Iraq. Helicopters, the same problem. Certain amount of flying hours, they're 4 or 5 times over that. And it turns out the terrain, the weather, the sand in Iraq is especially brutal on engines and other sensitive parts. So we're seeing a lot of wear and tear, and that's costing us billions now in having to repair the damage and what they call reset the force, that is, bring it back, those units that come back, to their pre-deployment condition.
And what about training? It's difficult for people to get training in some of the new equipment that's coming into the field virtually every month if they're using old equipment in the field.
The problem really comes into trying to get people who have come back and you are having on a cycle. They're not supposed to go back for 2 years or 3 years typically. And there's a build-up period in which the old equipment or the repaired equipment comes back to the unit. They're then complete. They then get to go train with that equipment before they deploy. So they're fresh, if you will. As you deploy units early, you cut into that training period, that preparation period, and if you're not careful, that can have consequences for the actual ability of the units to operate in the field.
And what's the effect of lessening the time at home for National Guard units?
The effect of lessening the time home for all units is, in fact, serious. You're talking about Problems with families, you're talking about simply the stress on the individual, you're talking about changing the readiness. When the forces are at home, even if they're just doing the regular stuff around the bases or they're repairing equipment, they're getting ready for whatever comes, another deployment or some other mission should it occur. So if you're lessening that time, the soldiers aren't as ready, more stress on them and their families, the equipment may not be as ready as it needs to be, all of which adds to difficulty, stress, and potential problems down the road.
That implies that so far the U.S. Armed Forces have been fortunate to avoid what problems do you think quick rotation could create?
Well, first of all, we have not, as I said, seen a problem with recruiting and retention, which we could, depending on how long this went on or how unpredictable the cycles come. It's one thing to get pulled in, let's say, for an extra tour. You're in your second or third tour. It's another one when that tour gets extended, as some of them are now for 3 months, 6 months, whatever. There's also a problem with the Guard. We have been allowing Guards personnel to volunteer to come into active service. The trouble is when you volunteer, you aren't under the same legal protection as if you are involuntarily brought in. So in some respects for Guardsmen, it's almost better to be brought in involuntarily.
Well, that way their employer, as I recall, agrees to keep their job available for them when they come back.
They have to. If you're a volunteer, most bets are off. And so, in a sense, by doing something which sounds like it's unfair, you're actually trying to be fairer to the Guardsmen. But the point is, when people were volunteering, there were problems at home. If you volunteered for a year, let's say you got an agreement from your employer, now you get extended as a Guards person. That agreement may no longer be binding. So there's all those problems that go along. What we haven't seen is the force breaking. It's stretched. Its equipment is very stretched. But it has not yet gotten to the crisis point. And it's not clear that it will, given all the things that are being done to normalize, regularize, standardize the process of movement.
Dan Gurwey, defense analyst with the Lexington Institute, thanks very much.
My pleasure.